people's minds to decades of fascinating research that exists on the topic of unconscious bias and neuroscience, and shows how our brains work in unconscious mode and allows us to better understand our own biases. And then we can create structures in the workplace that can help to guard against the biases, and we can create behaviors in ourselves to ward off the biases that we hold.
If a victim of illegal workplace behavior does not believe he or she will get a fair shake by reporting it internally, should the victim bypass that step and seek relief with the state or federal agencies, such as the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, if they can?
Absolutely. Victims have to figure out the strategy that can work best for them and that feels most safe. A workplace that's trying to prevent these behaviors will have in place multiple vehicles for reporting. So if somebody doesn't feel comfortable, for example, with a particular HR person or some supervisor in their line of authority to whom they might be told to report on paper, then there should be alternatives, perhaps a hotline, perhaps some other confidential way, or a confidant in the workplace. But when all these other efforts fail, then hopefully the law is there to protect them, and government agencies exist to be able to help and support them along the way.
And on that point, your research produced some surprises, and one was you thought the courts should be more even-handed than what you observed?
There is, unfortunately, a lot of support for that, in that courts are reluctant to hold employers accountable. They tend to dismiss these cases. There's often a higher bar that seems to exist for victims coming forward. There's a whole body of research around discounting the credibility of victims. I think that ties a lot into the unconscious bias conversation we just had, how victims come forward and people have their own stereotypes about why they didn't do this or do that. And they are discounted. Their stories are discounted by those who should be there to have a more even-handed approach in listening to them and helping them. So the result, however, is that there are far too many court decisions in which these cases are dismissed very early on. So we need to change that paradigm in the court system and have judges more open and able to really hear victims and allow these cases to proceed.
Lauren Stiller-Racline, noted author and expert on fighting harassment and other negative workplace issues. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
For InfoTrack, I'm Gina Tedesco.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
This is the story of the one. He's responsible for keeping a leading healthcare facility clean and safe. And he trusts Grainger's high-quality HVAC cleaning and safety products, combined with their world-class supply chain, to consistently deliver, ensuring he's covered inside and out, so he can focus on keeping his facility clean to help protect the health of everyone inside. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Selling your home, it's one of the biggest financial decisions you'll ever make. You could go it alone, trying to navigate market trends, determine fair pricing, and tackle tricky negotiations on your own. You could second-guess every decision, wondering if you're doing it right. Then there's the showings, the offers, and the mountain of paperwork. Or you could work with the expertise of a realtor, here to guide and help protect as you make your next big move. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors. Right by you.
Imagine you're enjoying an outdoor activity far from home, such as a camping trip, and suddenly there's a life-threatening emergency. Would you be mentally prepared to deal with the situation? Here with more, InfoTrack's Roy Mackey. Roy?
Thank you, Chris. Our guest is Kevin Estella, founder of Estella Wilderness Education, LLC, and the author of 101 Skills You Need to Survive in the Woods. Kevin, I think a lot of people would react to the title of your book by saying, hey, I live in the city and I never go hiking or anywhere near the woods. Maybe you could give us some examples of life-threatening emergencies where the skills that you write about can be important for anyone.
Sure. Let's face it, there are plenty of stories of people who get stranded on the side of the road, whether it's in blizzard conditions or the result of an accident, where they may have to rely on survival skills. They may have to learn how to signal or procure water or treat water while they're waiting for help to arrive. It's very easy to paint one picture in your head of what a survival situation looks on based on popular culture and media. But the reality is a survival situation can be very minor, and it may result just from an emergency that you can't resolve quickly. So it's not only applicable to those situations, but also just travel in the outdoors in general and finding ways of doing things easier and finding ways of challenging yourself. There's definitely merit in learning from hard training like is presented in this book.
There's training, there are skills, but there's also the mental aspect. Tell us a bit about that.
The mindset that's presented in the book is grounded in Sayak Kali, which is a Filipino martial arts system that I'm an instructor in. And we speak about the readiness formula. Readiness is a mindset, and it has three components. That's awareness, preparedness, and willingness. And all three of those components have to be there for someone to truly be considered ready. So I believe when people find out, wow, I just have gear, and I haven't really tried any of that gear out in the field or pressure tested it, well, I'm really not as willing as I should be. I think people are gonna see where their deficiencies are, and they're gonna start weak point training, identifying where they could improve themselves, and they'll get closer and closer to readiness every single day. The goal is to become a better version of yourself every single day. Focus on yourself, and that's part of mindset as well.
So for those who will be heading out this summer for an outdoor vacation, maybe hiking or camping, what are some items that you think are important that many people wouldn't necessarily think of?
I think one of the most important things people need to do before they head out is to let someone know before you go. I mean, you could have all the items in your kit. You could be totally prepared with all the gear and all the skills, but you have to let someone know where you're going, and you have to stick to your plan. After you have a very responsible person aware of where you're going and what you're doing, then you can start assessing the gear that you have on you. And that could include a water bottle, proper clothing, so you could sleep out in the great outdoors if need be, even without a shelter, because your clothing's your first line of shelter. Obviously a knife, cordage, flashlight, food provisions, first aid equipment, flashlight, and so on and so on. The list will vary from person to person based on their need, but you really want to start packing to your weakness. You don't want to carry the items that I carry, so to speak, unless the items that I carry work for you. And what you carry is going to be very, very personal, and it should be grounded in reality.
We talked about the materials, but you also write a lot about skills and training, and you've touched on that a bit. Maybe you could just touch on just a handful of the top skills that you think are most useful.
Fire starting is way up there. We use fire for cooking. We use fire for staying warm. We use fire for signaling. You can use fire to cut down a tree if you needed to, setting a fire at the base. After fire skills, learning how to actually use your tools, learning how to use your knife. Aside from that, obviously learning how to set up a shelter out of a tarp. I mean, with just a 10 by 10 square tarp, you can easily create multiple shelters for both living space and sleeping space. You can set up a shelter that will work for a group or an individual to increase visibility or to reduce the amount of wind coming into camp. I can't really say that one skill is the greatest of them all because they're entirely situational dependent. If you are in an emergency situation where you're using your vehicle as shelter, then I can't really say shelter is more important than, say, you know, first aid skills. But I'll tell you that if you get into an accident and, you know, you're hemorrhaging and you need to stop bleeding with a tourniquet, well, trauma skills, first aid skills are definitely more important than learning edible and medicinal plants.
Kevin Estella, the author of 101 Skills You Need to Survive in the Woods. Kevin, do you have a website?
I do. My website is kevinestella.com. That's K-E-V-I-N-E-S-T-E-L-A.
Well, thanks again for joining us today on InfoTrack.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope everyone stays safe and enjoys the outdoors.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
That wraps up another edition of InfoTrack. InfoTrack Internet services are provided by Pear.com. Thanks to this week's contributors, Roy Mackey and Gina Tedesco. Our executive producer is Randy Meyer. And I'm your host, Chris Whitting, inviting you to join us next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
101.1 FM WHSM Hayward, Muskie 101. This is InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's what's happening on this week's show.
What's happening with rural America? Populations are shrinking as rural counties wrestle with long-term declines and job losses.
Whether it's in manufacturing, whether it's in agriculture, whether it's in forestry, the rural economy has become so much more efficient, it needs way fewer people to produce more and more output.
Then, does power encourage a culture of bullying and harassment in the workplace? And what's the best way to address those problems without fear of retribution?
It is absolutely endemic in the workplace, and nobody is really safe from harassment or bullying or jokes that are painful or hurtful.
Those two stories and more are coming your way on this week's show. Don't go away. InfoTrack begins right after this.
This is the story of the one. As a quality technician in a food processing center, she knows that making the right call is the best way to avoid a recall. That's why she trusts Grainger's world-class supply chain to deliver the high-quality supplies she needs to help keep her production line, her equipment, and her customers happy and healthy. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So, you want to buy a house. You could go online, do your research, find the dream listing, go see it, and get catfished. Back to the drawing board. More scheduling, more viewings, more, this doesn't even look like the photos. You could finally find one that does match the photos. Then comes the offer. Stress rash? Yep, make that three. And here's the paperwork. Yep, never-ending paperwork. It's a lot. But you don't have to do it alone. Because there's an agent who's a Realtor here to guide and help protect you as you find the home that's right for you. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors. Right by you.
Confidence is knowing you're ready to handle whatever comes your way. That's what it feels like to take on your workday with Cintas. They make sure your AEDs are up to date, your fire extinguishers are tested and inspected, your floor mats are cleaned and delivered, and your workwear looks good, feels good, and is freshly laundered with the Cintas Apparel Plus program. So are you ready to take on today? Visit Cintas.com.
Oh, I'm ready!
And get ready for the workday.
Taxes was taxing. Now taxes is relaxing when you file for free.
I can file for free? TurboTax Free Edition. Roughly 37% of filers qualify. Simple form 1040 returns only. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free. I can file for free.
Now this is taxes. File for free with TurboTax Free Edition and get your maximum refund. No schedules except for earned income tax credit, child tax credit, and student loan interest. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
Our next guest says rural America is facing some tough economic challenges. He's David Swenson, associate scientist in the Department of Economics, Iowa State University. David, you've studied the data, and it appears clear that rural America is losing in several important areas. You say that dwindling population and disappearing jobs, those are the fates that await much of rural America. Not a very optimistic view.
Well, it's not something we didn't know. I've been doing this for 35 years, and I've been talking to people about the different dynamics of decline that have gone on over that time period. In our case, we go back, of course, to the great farm crisis of the mid-1980s when we had nothing short of a diaspora out of Iowa. The population contracted by 4.3%. We had a minor recovery in the next decade, but then we started to decline again. So I've been talking about this with my colleagues and with the people that I work with out in communities. I'm a regional economist, trying to help them understand both what's happening and what are some of the consequences. So the short answer is we've known that this has been going on. What I did in this little essay was to describe just how broadly spread this decline is in the United States and where it's affecting regions more so than less so, and which kinds of counties or which kinds or levels of urbanization are being affected.
Well, obviously, these people didn't disappear completely. They went to the cities, I guess, is what you're saying, right? The more metropolitan areas?
That's exactly right. If we just take those two time periods, 2008 to 2017, almost 99% of the job growth that occurred in the United States occurred in the metropolitan counties. The remaining 1%, just a little bit more than 1%, was split between 62% of all of the other non-metropolitan counties. Some of them are mid-sized city counties. They've got a city from 10,000 up to about 50,000. And the remainder don't have a city of 10,000 or more. They're much smaller places. They only got net a little over 1% of the growth, both of job gains and of population gains. So the difference between who's gaining and who's losing is stark.
We're talking with David Swenson, associate scientist in the Department of Economics at Iowa State University, talking about his research that shows rural America is facing some very difficult economic challenges. David, what happens to all that land and all of those houses and so on in rural areas? Are they just abandoned?
Well, we have twin things going on. First of all, the productive land is being used, whether it's for forestry purposes or for agricultural purposes. The land is in production. It's being farmed. It's being grazed. Animals are being raised. That kind of productivity, that still exists out on this land. But you are right. These small and medium-sized towns were created with a footprint that assumed more households, more economic activity. And as people migrate out, because the rural economies have become more efficient, whether it's in manufacturing, whether it's in agriculture, whether it's in forestry, the rural economy has become so much more efficient, it needs way fewer people to produce more and more output. So that surplus labor has to leave. Those communities can't support the households that they used to. There is widespread disinvestment among many of them, not all of them. And you end up with blight. You also end up with communities that have a footprint that's bigger than the local tax base can take care of. And so they end up with fiscal stress as well as social and economic stress.
Is there a chance that as baby boomers retire in huge numbers, that some of them will decide to move to these rural areas?
Yeah, that's one of the dreams that many people have, and that's some of the assumptions that many people have. There are places in the United States where retirees like to move, places in Minnesota and Wisconsin and the Ozarks of Missouri and places out in rural South Carolina and North Carolina. But for the most part, that's not going to happen. You'll get some movement back into the communities, but you're not going to get much movement back into the communities. These rural places, especially those in the most rural parts of New England and in the Midwest, most of them are going to continue to decline. There's not going to be some sort of resurgence of people moving back in. They're basically in a pattern of adjusting to decline. Now, we tell people you can do this, you know, a couple of ways. You can struggle and flail and try to chase smokestacks and try to grow. You can ignore it and it's going to happen no matter what. Or we have a thing here at Iowa State where we try to advise these communities to shrink smart, to think in terms of not whether you're growing or not, but whether you're providing the right kinds of public goods and services. And have you taken an inventory of what the needs are of your community beyond just jobs? And are you doing those things as a community to sustain and maintain what we would call your bundle of social capitals, the things that are important that make a place a good place to live besides just money? So there's lots of different approaches to how we cope with this, but the long run, there isn't anything out there that tells me that this isn't going to continue to happen, except for those places that are near metropolitan areas or growth centers. Those places will have greater opportunities to grow, but a large fraction of the space in the Dakotas and Nebraska and Kansas and Iowa, a large fraction of that space is going to continue to depopulate.
David, demographically, are there primarily the people still remaining in rural America tend to be older, or are there any age patterns there?
Yes, people in rural America tend to be older. The out-migration, the gap, they call it the hollowing out, but the gap in their population pyramid or their population composition is for young adults, comparatively young adults, from ages 25 to 54. Those are the prime working ages. People who are in those age groups who have acquired skills over time, whether they acquire them locally or they acquire them by going to college, they find that their labor is worth much, much more in urban areas. Their opportunities for lifetime advancement are higher. The range of amenities that you and I enjoy are also greater in urban areas, as well as opportunities for families and for children. Those are all of the reasons that people move to rural areas. They leave rural areas in search of basically a higher quality of life. And that's what happens. And so you end up with a smaller labor pool in those prime working ages. And that labor pool is tailored to what remains at those regional economies. It's tailored to the dominant industries, whether it's manufacturing or forestry or mining or agriculture. It's the kind of labor that those dominant industries need, plus the industries that support and supply those industries. So that's what ends up getting left out in our rural areas.
Will these declines eventually settle down and perhaps stop? Or is this just sort of going on into infinity, so to speak?
The declines are not inexorable in terms of going ultimately down to zero. Land is always going to be farmed. Mines are going to be mined. Timber is going to be cut. All of those types of things are going to occur in the United States. And there are going to be innovations and changes in economic activity that create new opportunities. During the last decade, for example, here in Iowa, we had an ethanol boom and we added another something like 25 ethanol plants that reintroduced manufacturing into parts of the state that didn't have that kind of manufacturing. We'll get those kinds of changes over time, but in general, most of these places are going to continue to decline. As their core industries become more efficient, as they, again, adopt new technologies, new methods of production, new definitions of the scale required to be profitable, all of those activities shed labor, and that shed labor goes someplace else. And in our country, that excess labor finds its way to urban markets.
David Swenson, associate scientist in the Department of Economics at Iowa State University. David, thank you so much for talking with us today.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Next, what to do about workplace bullying and harassment. That story, straight ahead.
There's more InfoTrack coming up. Stay tuned.
As a fan, you know all the important sports cliches. And when you save money by bundling your home and auto with Progressive, you can get out there and give it 110%, even though that's mathematically impossible. And remember, failure is not an option. Well, it's always an option, just not a good one. But you're not worried, because you've got ice in your veins. You're on fire. How can both of those things be true at the same time? Well, that's between you and your doctor. So get out there and leave it all on the field. Leave what? Who cares? Just leave it and save with a bundle from Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states or situations.
Confidence is knowing you're ready to handle whatever comes your way. That's what it feels like to take on your workday with Cintas. They make sure your AEDs are up to date, your fire extinguishers are tested and inspected, your floor mats are cleaned and delivered, and your workwear looks good, feels good, and is freshly laundered with the Cintas Apparel Plus program. So are you ready to take on today? Visit Cintas.com.
Oh, I'm ready!
And get ready for the workday.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Okay, I have to tell you. I was just looking on eBay, where I go for all kinds of things I love, and there it was.
That hologram trading card. One of the rarest, the last one I needed for my set. Shiny like the
designer handbag of my dreams. One of a kind. eBay had it. And now everyone's asking, ooh, where'd you get your
windshield wipers? eBay has all the parts that fit my car. No more annoying. Just beautiful.
Whatever you love, find it on eBay. eBay. Things people love.
Now, back to InfoTrack. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Some call it workplace misconduct. Others, harassment or bullying. What's the best way to deal with it, without fear of retribution? With the story, here's InfoTrack's Gina Tedesco. Gina?
Thanks, Chris. Despite the Me Too movement and multiple celebrity men losing their powerful jobs, workplace harassment is far from finished. Many victims remain fearful of reporting harassment. But noted author and expert Lauren Stiller Raclean is out with a new book, The Shield of Silence: How Power Perpetuates a Culture of Harassment and Bullying in the Workplace. It contains strategies for positive changes, and Ms. Raclean joins us now. First off, this is not just a women's issue, is it? Men, too, can be sexually harassed or bullied because of their sexual orientation, race, or other reasons, true?
Absolutely. It's so important that you raise that question because it is absolutely endemic in the workplace, and nobody is really safe from harassment or bullying or jokes that are painful or hurtful. So what I feel that's really critical is that we look at the range of workplace behaviors that cause harm, as well as think as inclusively as possible about the people who can be harmed by these behaviors.
And let's pick up on that, because you do say that companies should build a more inclusive, respectful environment. Now, of course, we can't cover the whole book here, but give us about two or three tactics that they should carry out.
Part of the focus here is looking at what causes the silence, for example. People are afraid of retaliation. They're afraid of being ostracized in the workplace. So they're looking to leaders to lead and to create a culture where people are not afraid to come forward, and where bystanders, even who witness negative behaviors, won't be afraid to stand up or help others as well. But to do that requires thinking about culture in the big picture sense of the word. It means thinking not about a legal definition of harassment, but thinking about how we treat one another respectfully and with kindness and with consideration. From a leadership perspective, it means being engaged in what's happening in the workplace. It means being willing to hold people accountable, to set metrics for first chances, second chances, keeping track of how people are doing. It means making changes with respect to training, broadening the kind of training that is done, perhaps curbing alcohol use in the workplace at social events where so many negative behaviors often arise. There's a whole range of types of accountability behaviors and reporting behaviors that need to change. So that's really what the book focuses on, which are what strategies can be employed both by employers and by employees to be able to change culture for good and for the long term.
Like many situations in life, people will make changes if there's something in it for them. So what's in it for employers to make changes?
I think everything. There's so much data out there that tells you that if your employees are engaged, you have a better result. There's data that ties diversity to more profitability, that ties engagement and happiness of employees to greater profitability and better output. So the real question is, if you are a heads-up leader, why on earth are you not more involved in ensuring that people are not afraid to come to work and they're not afraid to be themselves? Because at the end of the day, you're going to have such a better result in the workplace by being a workplace where people are comfortable bringing their whole selves to work and diving into work without being fearful of what's happening around them.
We're visiting with Lauren Stiller Raclean, author of The Shield of Silence: How Power Perpetuates a Culture of Harassment and Bullying in the Workplace. You started to talk about training. Let me take two training ideas one at a time. Explain what you call unconscious bias training.
All of us, every single one of us, are creatures of how we were raised, the influences in our life, our religion, our economic background, our race, ethnicity. And that creates ourselves, our whole selves, but it also brings with it our unconscious thoughts, which means our brain gets to a certain place long before we catch up to it. And that brings into play unconscious biases. We think we are fair, we think we are accepting of others, but in reality, we all carry stereotypes and sets of beliefs that we have to know and understand within ourselves in order to fight against it. What unconscious bias training does is it opens people's minds to decades of fascinating research that exists on the topic of unconscious bias and neuroscience and shows how our brains work in unconscious mode and allows us to better understand our own biases. And then we can create structures in the workplace that can help to guard against the biases, and we can create behaviors in ourselves to ward off the biases that we hold.
If a victim of illegal workplace behavior does not believe he or she will get a fair shake by reporting it internally, should the victim bypass that step and seek relief with the state or federal agencies, such as the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, if they can?
Absolutely. Victims have to figure out the strategy that can work best for them and that feels most safe. A workplace that's trying to prevent these behaviors will have in place multiple vehicles for reporting. So if somebody doesn't feel comfortable, for example, with a particular HR person or some supervisor in their line of authority to whom they might be told to report on paper, then there should be alternatives, perhaps a hotline, perhaps some other confidential way or a confidant in the workplace. But when all these other efforts fail, then hopefully the law is there to protect them and government agencies exist to be able to help and support them along the way.
And on that point, your research produced some surprises, and one was you thought the courts should be more even-handed than what you observed?
There is unfortunately a lot of support for that, in that courts are reluctant to hold employers accountable. They tend to dismiss these cases. There's often a higher bar that seems to exist for victims coming forward. There's a whole body of research around discounting the credibility of victims. I think that ties a lot into the unconscious bias conversation we just had, how victims come forward and people have their own stereotypes about why they didn't do this or do that, and they are discounted. Their stories are discounted by those who should be there to have a more even-handed approach in listening to them and helping them. So the result, however, is that there are far too many court decisions in which these cases are dismissed very early on. So we need to change that paradigm in the court system and have judges more open and able to really hear victims and allow these cases to proceed.
Lauren Stiller-Racleen, noted author and expert on fighting harassment and other negative workplace issues. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
For InfoTrack, I'm Gina Tedesco.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
This is the story of the one. He's responsible for keeping a leading healthcare facility clean and safe. And he trusts Grainger's high-quality HVAC cleaning and safety products, combined with their world-class supply chain, to consistently deliver, ensuring he's covered inside and out, so he can focus on keeping his facility clean to help protect the health of everyone inside. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Selling your home, it's one of the biggest financial decisions you'll ever make. You could go it alone, trying to navigate market trends, determine fair pricing, and tackle tricky negotiations on your own. You could second-guess every decision, wondering if you're doing it right. Then there's the showings, the offers, and the mountain of paperwork. Or you could work with the expertise of a realtor, here to guide and help protect as you make your next big move. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors. Right by you.
Imagine you're enjoying an outdoor activity far from home, such as a camping trip, and suddenly there's a life-threatening emergency. Would you be mentally prepared to deal with the situation? Here with more, InfoTrack's Roy Mackey. Roy?
Thank you, Chris. Our guest is Kevin Estella, founder of Estella Wilderness Education, LLC, and the author of 101 Skills You Need to Survive in the Woods. Kevin, I think a lot of people would react to the title of your book by saying, hey, I live in the city and I never go hiking or anywhere near the woods. Maybe you could give us some examples of life-threatening emergencies where the skills that you write about can be important for anyone.
Sure. Let's face it. There are plenty of stories of people who get stranded on the side of the road, whether it's in blizzard conditions or the result of an accident, where they may have to rely on survival skills. They may have to learn how to signal or procure water or treat water while they're waiting for help to arrive. It's very easy to paint one picture in your head of what a survival situation looks on based on popular culture and media. But the reality is a survival situation can be very minor and it may result just from an emergency that you can't resolve quickly. So it's not only applicable to those situations, but also just travel in the outdoors in general and finding ways of doing things easier and finding ways of challenging yourself. There's definitely merit in learning from hard training like is presented in this book.
There's training, there are skills, but there's also the mental aspect. Tell us a bit about that.
The mindset that's presented in the book is grounded in Sayak Kali, which is a Filipino martial arts system that I'm an instructor in. And we speak about the readiness formula. Readiness is a mindset, and it has three components. That's awareness, preparedness, and willingness. And all three of those components have to be there for someone to truly be considered ready. So I believe when people find out, wow, I just have gear, and I haven't really tried any of that gear out in the field or pressure tested it, well, I'm really not as willing as I should be. I think people are going to see where their deficiencies are, and they're going to start weak point training, identifying where they could improve themselves, and they'll get closer and closer to readiness every single day. The goal is to become a better version of yourself every single day. Focus on yourself, and that's part of mindset as well.
So for those who will be heading out this summer for an outdoor vacation, maybe hiking or camping, what are some items that you think are important that many people wouldn't necessarily think of?
I think one of the most important things people need to do before they head out is to let someone know before you go. I mean, you could have all the items in your kit. You could be totally prepared with all the gear and all the skills, but you have to let someone know where you're going and you have to stick to your plan. After you have a very responsible person aware of where you're going and what you're doing, then you can start assessing the gear that you have on you. And that could include a water bottle, proper clothing so you could sleep out in the great outdoors if need be, even without a shelter, because your clothing's your first line of shelter. Obviously a knife, cordage, flashlight, food provisions, first aid equipment, flashlight, and so on and so on. The list will vary from person to person based on their need, but you really want to start packing to your weakness. You don't want to carry the items that I carry, so to speak, unless the items that I carry work for you. And what you carry is going to be very, very personal, and it should be grounded in reality.
We talked about the materials, but you also write a lot about skills and training, and you've touched on that a bit. Maybe you could just touch on just a handful of the top skills that you think are most useful.
Fire starting is way up there. We use fire for cooking. We use fire for staying warm. We use fire for signaling. You can use fire to cut down a tree if you needed to, setting a fire at the base. After fire skills, learning how to actually use your tools, learning how to use your knife. Aside from that, obviously learning how to set up a shelter out of a tarp. I mean, with just a 10 by 10 square tarp, you can easily create multiple shelters for both living space and sleeping space. You can set up a shelter that will work for a group or an individual to increase visibility or to reduce the amount of wind coming into camp. I can't really say that one skill is the greatest of them all because they're entirely situational dependent. If you are in an emergency situation where you're using your vehicle as shelter, then I can't really say shelter is more important than, say, you know, first aid skills. But I'll tell you that if you get into an accident and, you know, you're hemorrhaging and you need to stop bleeding with a tourniquet, well, trauma skills, first aid skills are definitely more important than learning edible and medicinal plants.
Kevin Estella, the author of 101 Skills You Need to Survive in the Woods. Kevin, do you have a website?
I do. My website is kevinestella.com. That's KevinEstella.
Well, thanks again for joining us today on InfoTrack.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope everyone stays safe and enjoys the outdoors.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
That wraps up another edition of InfoTrack. InfoTrack Internet services are provided by Pear.com. Thanks to this week's contributors, Roy Mackey and Gina Tedesco. Our executive producer is Randy Meyer. And I'm your host, Chris Whitting, inviting you to join us next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
Blame it all on my roots. I showed up in boots,
and ruined your black tie affair. The last one to know, the last one to show, I was the last one you thought you'd see there. And I saw the surprise and the fear in his eyes when I took his glass of champagne. And I toasted you, said, honey, we may be through, but you'll never hear me complain. 'Cause I got friends in low places where the whiskey drowns and the beer chases my blues away. Slip on down to the oasis. So I've got a friend in low places. Guess I was wrong, I just don't belong, but then I've been there before. Everything's alright, I'll just say goodnight and I'll show myself to the door. Hey, I didn't mean to cause a big scene, just give me an hour and then I'll be as high as that ivory tower that you're living on. 'Cause I got friends in low places where the whiskey drowns and the beer chases my blues away. And I'll be okay. Yeah, I'm not big on social graces. Think I'll slip on.
Yeah.
South Alabama. Her daddy had a heart like a 9-pound hammer. Think he even did a little time in the slammer. What was I thinking? She snuck out one night and met me by the front gate. Her daddy came out waving that 12-gauge. We tore out the drive, he peppered my tailgate. What was I thinking? Oh, I knew there'd be hell to pay, but that crossed my mind a little too late. 'Cause I was thinking that a little white tank top sitting right there in the middle by me. I was thinking about a long kiss, man, just gotta get going where the night might be. I know what I was feeling, but what was I thinking? Been on our heels, pulled off the road and kicked it in four wheels, shut off the lights and tore through a cornfield. What was I thinking? Out the other side, she was hollering faster, took the dirt road, had the radio blasting, hit the honky-tonk for a little close dancing. What was I thinking? Oh, I knew there'd be hell to pay, but that crossed my mind a little too late. 'Cause I was thinking about a little white tank top sitting right there in the middle by me. I was thinking about a long kiss, man, just gotta get going where the night might be. I know what I was feeling, but what was I thinking? To kill tattoo, tried to cut in, I knocked out his front tooth. We ran outside, hood sliding like Bo Duke. What was I thinking? I finally got her home at a 2:30. Later, daddy's in a lawn chair sitting on the driveway. Put it in park as he started my way. What was I thinking? Oh, what was I thinking? Oh, what was I thinking? Then she gave a come and get me grin, and like a bullet we were gone again. 'Cause I was thinking about a little white tank top sitting right there in the middle by me. I was thinking about a long kiss, man, just gotta get going where the night might be. I know what I was feeling, yeah, I know what I was feeling. What was I thinking?
Stars are gonna light up a midnight sky. The sun's gonna burn on the 4th of July. Tides are gonna turn with the pull of the moon. And I'm gonna love you.
Birds will fly south when the winter comes. Snow's gonna fall and rivers gonna run. April's gonna rain and flowers gonna bloom. And I'm gonna love you.
So good that it almost hurts. Steady and true as a Bible verse. My heart skips just thinking of you. Go on and bet it all. Baby, we can't lose. Earth's gonna shake every now and then. Some runaway roads are gonna dead end. And on those days when the world feels cruel, I'm gonna love you.
Time's gonna put a few lines on our face.
We can cover it up, but hair's gonna gray.
Life's gonna fly and be gone too soon. And I'm gonna love you. Baby, I'm gonna love you.
It's Kubota Orange Days. From America's number one selling compact tractor to zero-turn mowers and versatile RTVs, get your perfect match delivered to your door. And now through June 30th, get zero down, 0% APR for 84 months on select compact tractors. See the details at KubotaOrangeDays.com.
Stop by to see the full line of Kubota products at Bar H Implement in Stone Lake or visit online barhimp.com. That's barhimp.com.
Judge Brad Schimmel sure has a lot of special interest donors. Big drug companies, corporate lobbyists, right-wing billionaires, and extremist groups. Schimmel once claimed that there's nothing wrong with politicians using their office to benefit their own campaign's contributors. And as Attorney General, Schimmel repeatedly took action to put his own campaign donors' interests ahead of Wisconsin residents. He refused to sue the big drug companies responsible for the opioid crisis. He supports a pre-Civil War law to ban abortion. And he sued to overturn the health care law that protects people with pre-existing conditions. Under his watch, fines for corporate polluters dropped to a 30-year low, all while Wisconsinites were left behind. Tell Judge Brad Schimmel to watch out for us, not his special interest sponsors. Call 262-548-7548. That's 262-548-7548. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Incorporated.
Wherever you are in Wisconsin, there's a free and confidential Aging and Disability Resource Center, ADRC, or Tribal Partner Agency. We're here for older adults, adults with disabilities, and your families. ADRCs are a bridge to support for benefits and financial assistance, transportation, in-home care, and more. Get to know your local ADRC and connect with resources today. Call toll-free 1-844-WIS-ADRC or go to findmyadrc.org. Paid for by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
Winter is out and winning is in. It's our Break in the Spring statewide text to win contest on your local Civic Media radio station. Your daily shot at a Chula Vista getaway, Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets, or $100 cash. And every entry gets you closer to the grand prize, a brand new Verlo Queen mattress set complete with a mattress, sheets, protector, and pillows. Download the Civic Media app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Choose your station, then get set to win starting Monday, March 24th.
This love that I feel for you always will be. Well, you're not just time that I'm killing. I'm no longer one of those guys. As sure as I live, this love that I give is gonna be yours until the day that I die. Takes its toll on the body, makes the young girl's brown hair turn gray. Well, honey, I don't care, I ain't in love with your hair, and if it all
it's happening to me. I've already forgotten every woman but you. Oh, darling, I'm gonna love you forever. Forever and ever, amen. As long as old men sit and talk about the weather. As long as old women sit and talk about old men. If you wonder how long I'll be faithful, just listen to how this song ends. I'm gonna love you forever and ever, forever and ever, amen. I'm gonna love you forever and ever, forever and ever.
Mine is 5 plus 5, not a rocket science. This day and time, that's hard to find, it's true. The road we're on ain't a traffic jam. It's a sunny drive on a piece of land. It's paradise as long as I'm with you. It's like 1, 2.